Age discrimination is something that's now starting to feature in the national agenda more and more. In no small way, thanks to my colleague and guest today, Age Discrimination Commissioner Susan Ryan. One of the areas in which age discrimination has some of its greatest and most destructive impacts is the arena of employment. Attitudes to older people are such that employers often apply incorrect stereotypes to mature age workers when deciding not to select them for a job. Yet, at the same time, there are inbuilt barriers in things like workers' compensation, income insurance, and essential professional licenses that actively discourage employers from hiring older people and effectively push those people out of the workforce. This week, Susan has released a paper urging action on this area of age discrimination, and it's entitled Working Past Our 60s, Reforming Laws and Policies for the Older Worker. Susan, we last spoke to you about indirect age discrimination and the internet back in March of this year, so welcome back to Podrights.
Good to be talking to you again, Graham.
Now, just for a recap for a moment, if we can, Susan, how would you describe age discrimination in general? What does it consist of?
Age discrimination is what happens when a person is refused something, say a job or a service, or excluded from something, or given worse treatment in any way simply because of their age. That's what age discrimination is.
And we've got legislation making that unlawful now, for which of course you're the commissioner.
We have the Age Discrimination Act, and that renders unlawful any worse treatment of people in areas like employment, education, goods and services, finance, simply because of a person's age.
Yep.
That's been in place now since 2004.
Now, coming to employment, the first area that you mentioned, for mature age and older workers, how real is the problem of discrimination? I mean, what sort of discriminatory things are these people experiencing?
Look, we know from available research, including from the ABS and very reputable research organisations, that many people are forced out of the workforce in their 50s. Sometimes they're told, oh, look, you're too old for us, we want a younger workforce, which is direct discrimination and clearly unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, they're just given hints, very heavy-handed hints, like, oh, you must be thinking of retirement soon, or, look, there are going to be some redundancy packages. I think you'd be very keen to get out of the workforce, wouldn't you? And people feel that sort of pressure, and often they accept a redundancy in their 50s only to find that they cannot get another job, and that's a disastrous situation for them.
Mm. So we know that this discrimination is occurring against this particular section of the employment market. But apart from the clear human rights imperatives that you've talked about, with younger people entering the workforce all the time, what's in it for government and business to try to stamp out age discrimination? Why is it important to address it?
Well, it's certainly important from the national economy point of view. Even though, yes, we do have younger workers coming into the workforce, they're not coming in enough numbers to replace the taxation paid by the older workers who are leaving.
Right.
And they're not bringing with them the skills and experience you get after several decades in the workforce, so they're not as productive to begin with as your experienced older worker. We have a growing economy. We're very fortunate in that regard. We have a need for skilled workers. We hear a lot about having to bring in skilled migrants all the time. But it's in the national interest to use better that huge talent pool of perhaps 2 million people over 55 who could be working but who aren't. But there's plenty of room for the younger workers, so it's not a competition between them.
And for most of us as younger workers, I mean, I can really remember some excellent mentors that I heard that would fall into this group that you're talking about who are now being discriminated against.
That's right. When a person starts in a job, if they're, you know, they're in their 20s or they might even be a bit older, but it's a new job, they really need some guidance.
Mm.
And these days we call that mentoring. And if we have pushed out of the workplace the people who have got that experience and who do feel in a sort of a helpful senior relationship with these younger workers, the younger workers will not progress as well as they might. Mm. Mentoring is a wonderful thing. It builds very good human bonds, very good workplace relationships. And we are denying younger workers mentors if we continue to push people out of the workforce too early.
Mm. Now, you've just released this Working Past Our 60s paper. What issues does it specifically address, apart from the ones that we've already talked about?
Yes, in this paper, I'm just focusing on what we're calling the external barriers.
Mm-hmm.
That is, rules relating to workers' compensation, to income insurance, to trade insurance, and to some professional licences, as well as some of the rules around superannuation. Now, these are all contain elements that make it much more difficult for a person to keep on working. For example, in most states and territories of Australia, over 65, even if you have a job, you're not properly covered for workers' compensation in the event of a workplace accident. Now, of course, this is a huge disincentive to the person to keep on working and to the employer,
and for the employee,
who is
yeah.
not happy about having employees who are not covered. So we're calling them external barriers because they can be changed. They're rules that are made by government in consultation with the insurance industry, and they can be changed. And we are seeing some little rays of sunlight and some change on the horizon. By making it possible for a worker over 65 to keep on working and have the same protections as a worker of 50, we certainly will be changing the opportunities for older people in the workforce.
Because the effects of age discrimination on older workers are quite profound, among other things, I understand we've seen an increase in homelessness in those age groups. How is age discrimination in employment impacting on older people?
Well, look, you're quite right, Graham. When we look at the increase in homelessness, we see that a lot of those people who are homeless have, as the source of their homelessness, being forced out of the workforce too early.
Mm.
You know, if a person gets forced out of the workforce in their early 50s, well, they're a long, long way away from being able to claim the age pension. They have probably very little superannuation savings, certainly not enough to live on, and they probably can't draw it down anyway. So their only alternative is to go on the unemployment benefit, Newstart, which is a very, very small income support measure. People in that circumstance often find they lose their homes, they often lose their relationships because of the tension and worry that comes, and they often become severely depressed, sometimes mentally ill, and you can see the spiralling down to homelessness is almost inevitable with some people. So it's a huge issue for our nation. It's not just about having more old people in jobs. It's about making sure that people can exercise the human right to earn a living.
And you've mentioned it earlier, Susan, but when we look at the structural barriers that you've talked about in this paper, and also at things like the age pension and just the population numbers, there's a historical and emerging demographic backdrop to this that we as a society have really failed to keep up with, isn't there?
That's absolutely right. Our age pension came into effect in 1909, and the eligibility rules there were 65 for men and 60 for women.
Mm.
But most people never got it because they never lived that long. Only about 4% lived long enough to get the age pension. Now we have a situation where over 80% of retired people draw full or part pension. And for over 55%, the age pension is their only source of income. So we now have a huge bulk of our population, it's getting up towards 20%, who are forced to live on full or part age pension, as opposed to the 4% 100 years ago. Why haven't we changed our way of thinking?
Mm.
When most of the population was dead by 60, the rules of eligibility, you know, might have suited the government of the beginning of the 20th century. Now that most of us are living and living very well into our 80s and beyond, we need a different view about what is old, what is a typical average working life.
Mm, mm.
How should we respond to people in their 60s and 70s? And we certainly shouldn't be responding to them as if they should have been dead.
Yeah. So you've set out there, Susan, in the last couple of minutes, a really big challenge, not just for individuals who are older, but for the nation as a whole. Is there hope to be able to address this? How hopeful should we be? I mean, what sort of responses are coming from governments and business communities on this topic?
Well, look, it's fair to say that governments have recognised, perhaps belatedly, but they have recognised that we have to have a completely different and more positive approach to the older worker and the older citizen generally. So the federal government now has a number of policies in place, special financial incentives for businesses who want to take on older workers or retrain their existing older workers so they can continue to be productive. They're out and about now. And I have to say, employer organisations are also very positive and very active in making sure their members, you know, the Chambers of Commerce and members of the AIG and so forth, are aware that there are these packages of funds to assist them, refreshing their older workforce, if you like, and indeed hiring for the first time older workers. So at that very top policy level, there's some recognition. I think state governments too, when they look at their workers' compensation arrangements, when they look at the growing demands for public housing or affordable housing, understand that the best thing to give more security to the individual and to reduce the demands on the public purse is to make sure people can keep working and keep on earning their own income. So at policy level, I'd say there's a recognition, but in terms of actual attitudes of employers, well, Graham, we still have a long way to go.
Okay. And of course, in the employment contract, there's two sides, isn't there? I mean, that's employers and business people. But in meetings and consultations that you've had, what sort of things are you hearing from the people that we've been talking about, that is older workers? What's the mood on the ground in terms of that group of the population?
Well, I'm sorry to have to say it, but it's a very pessimistic mood. I mean, the people who come along to forums and meetings are often people, maybe in their 50s, maybe in their 60s, who have been knocked back, who are really trying to get employment, full or part-time, but have been knocked back dozens of times, even just at the recruiting stage. They've been knocked back even from being able to get their CV accepted or their application accepted. So there is and they're experiencing huge financial hardship, often illness as a result of this situation. So that mood is pessimistic, and I would like to see some pretty swift action and perhaps some better management of some of the government's programs through Centrelink and so on, so that people in that situation can go and get, you know, really clear and appropriate information as to how to go about improving their chances of getting a job. There, in the private sector, there are now some recruiting agencies that just focus on the older worker, and people can go online and find out about those, and they're doing good business. So the individual who's had all the knockbacks is despondent, but there is some information there if we can make it accessible enough, and there are some services there through these special recruitment agencies that feature, you know, that want the older worker, that show rays of hope. But we need a lot more of the positive so that those people who've had very bad experiences can get, you know, get going again and feel that it's worth on having another try.
But you do have some positives to talk about, which is great. If someone feels that they have been or that they're currently experiencing age discrimination in employment, they can lodge a complaint with us at the Commission, can't they?
They can, and more have been doing it. And it's very important for people to understand that this is free if you have experience age discrimination in the workplace or from a recruitment agency. You can ring the Australian Human Rights Commission or you can email us, and your issue will be dealt with very carefully in private, and it's a no-cost service. Many people who make complaints are able to get, through conciliation, a satisfactory resolution of their complaint. So even though we're not in the marketplace of saying we just want to hear people's complaints, it is important that people use what the law provides, and that's the complaints facility at the Australian Human Rights Commission. And from them doing that, we get a much clearer and sharper picture of what is actually going on in the workplace.
And they can do that by going to our website and having a look at www.humanrights.gov.au and click on the complaints link. If a person's not quite at the stage that they want to lodge a complaint, but they'd like a bit of support, a bit of peer support, a bit of ongoing information or engagement with other older workers, are there other organisations that they can turn to or become involved with?
Yes, there are. There are a number of, if they go online, there's a number of older workers support groups. I won't recite them all because there are quite a few of them. And also the major organisations for seniors, National Seniors, they have a very good website that was full of information. COTA, Council for the Ageing, and COTA has an active program in every state and territory. I would really advise older people to look at what their peak bodies can offer in terms of information, events. You know, they have a lot of meetings where all these things are discussed. There's certainly, you know, there's a lot to be gained by getting together with people in your peer group and working out what's going on. And, of course, then there's a lot to be gained by not feeling that it's only you who's having these difficulties.
Sure. And if people aren't on the internet or don't use the internet, all of those organisations and the Human Rights Commission are in the phone book as well, Susan, of course, aren't they?
They are in the phone book, and Seniors Australia puts out a hard copy monthly magazine, I think it is, that they can get hold of. But yes, go to the phone book. I mean, that's the best way.
Yep.
And there is an amazing amount of information, helpful information, but of course it's not helpful if you haven't got hold of it.
No,
so,
that's right.
That's a great way forward.
Yeah. All right, Susan, well, thanks very much again for being with us. This isn't something that will change or make go away overnight, but it certainly sounds as though there's some movement at the station, and the rate of change is picking up speed, so that's good news.
I agree. The case is so strong that I believe we're going to see many more older people get what they're entitled to, and that is the right to earn a living and lead a decent life.
Yep. Well, thanks again for being with us, Susan. Now, before we close, in other Commission news, nominations for the 25th Human Rights Awards are now open. There are 10 categories of awards, so if you know that people who should be nominated for any of these awards, or the Human Rights Medal, or the Youth Medal, and that might even include if you want to nominate your own organisation or a project that you've been working on yourself, you can find out more on our website at www.humanrights.gov.au/HR awards. So thanks to all of you for listening to PodRights. Remember that this podcast is for you. So if you have a suggestion of someone with whom I should talk or a comment on the podcast, please email me at podrights@humanrights.gov.au or find me and message me on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Graeme Innes, GraeMeInnes. And keep your podcatchers ready for the next Pod Rights in the series, because human rights are for everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Graeme Innes. Goodbye for now.